T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's a pleasure to have you along this afternoon. I would like you to indulge me for the next couple of hours. Indulgences really kind of define Mark Summers' career from a tasty standpoint, from the show that when you watched it as a kid, you couldn't believe there was something that cool on TV. He is the host of the famous, infamous Double Dare. He is all over Food Network, Unwrapped, producer of Restaurant Impossible, Dinner Impossible. He is a judge on Guy's Grocery Games, and we are thrilled to have Mark Summers join us for the next couple hours so we can dive deep into, what, a pool of slime or something with you. It is so good to have you in. Thank you for indulging us.
My pleasure. I left Santa Barbara this morning, drove up, and have had a beautiful time in your lovely city. You never have to bend my arm to come up here. It's amazing. And here we are. I can't believe you want me for 2 hours, but I'm excited.
We got an awful lot to talk about.
Apparently so.
I got questions. She's got questions.
Yes,
we've got questions. The audience might have questions.
Well, we hope so.
And I figured that we could actually bother you for at least 2 hours because you have a family relation going on here.
Yes.
Can we spill the beans?
Sure. Why not? Go ahead. Go for it.
Albie, in his attempt to finally book a megastar, says, I got one that I know I can deliver. I said, oh, really? Who's it going
to
be?
I'm waiting to see who it is.
You are Albie's uncle.
This is true. I have been for many years.
Fantastic.
Yes.
Blood uncle? Marriage uncle? How's that work?
Yes. Oh, well, Albie's brother... Or husband, oh, hold on, Albie's, I'll get this right, Albie's father is the brother of my wife, there you go.
Okay.
There you go.
Yeah.
So, cousin by marriage, and he said that he used to be a production assistant.
Worked on
some
Restaurant
of your
Impossible,
shows.
And I forgot, did you work on Dinner? No, just Restaurant. Restaurant Impossible, yeah, yeah.
That's
so
cool.
He's ruined your shows too.
No, not at all. You know, he knows what he's doing. He's, you know, this is where he belongs, though, because he is a genius. He's a the character from why can't I think of the Dustin Hoffman character that he played in? Oh my God, what is it anyway? But I mean, he's a savant when it comes
Rain
to
Man.
Sport. Yeah, Rain Man. I mean, he comes up with the most insane facts that's like nobody in the world should know, but he knows all this stuff.
It is very, very helpful. He makes us sound good each and every day. When I was a kid,
yes.
My influences from the broadcasting world were Bob Costas, Bob Barker, Howard Stern, and Mark Summers. I'm not even kidding.
That's an amazing list, quite honestly.
It is an amazing list. There is all kinds of different talent there. There is all kinds of different touch points of my culture. How old were you when you got the Double Dare gig?
34. I was 34, and focus groups, because I always looked much younger than
yeah,
I really was,
definitely.
Focus groups thought I was like 22, 23, and I was like a big brother or an uncle. And so I wasn't allowed back then to talk about being married, having kids, because they wanted to keep the mystery alive. And I was on the Today Show with Bryant Gumbel, and they told him, Bryant, do not talk about him being married, do not talk about him having kids. And, of course, the first thing Bryant says is, Mark Summers is here, he's host of Double Dare, and, of course, we know you're married and have a couple of kids. First thing out of his mouth.
Jeez.
Yeah, and so he sort of spilled the beans, and then the word was out, and, you know, it didn't seem to affect anything. But, you know, let's go back and talk about the people that you admired. Bob Costas started doing, I think, play-by-play when he was about 19 years old back in the Midwest.
Syracuse Sky Chiefs is
yes.
where I think it began, and then he went to St. Louis for a one-and-done run with the St. Louis NBA team
yeah.
that came and went.
Yes, that didn't work out too much. But do you know what his dad is known for?
A gambling problem.
No. The number one sports agency, which has been acquired now by William Morris, is IMG, International Management Group, and Bob's father started it.
Really?
Yeah, he was one of the founding fathers of IMG, and that's where he got sort of the sports stuff back. And his mother, Lila, and I worked on a show called Celebrity Sweepstakes. I was a writer on Celebrity Sweepstakes, a game show that was on NBC, and Lila was our contestant coordinator. And I used to have an office there, and Arnold Schwarzenegger used to come in, smoke cigars, and talk to his then wife, who is no longer his wife, and You know, so it's weird how when you start talking about this, and then you go to Stern, who I think perhaps one of the top interviewers in all of broadcasting.
Ever.
I mean, you listen to the stuff he does. I'm a huge James Taylor fan, and I thought I knew everything about JT. And the stuff he got out of him the last time he was on the show was absolutely remarkable. And I did the show twice. And nothing is more frightening than sitting in that green room wondering what the hell Howard Stern is going to ask you.
Right.
You know, and my wife said, you better not talk about our sex life. And, you know, the only thing he asked me to do was go in the other room and measure myself. That was as bad as it got. But that was an amazing experience.
Physical challenge?
Yeah, let me tell you. And he had just gotten the divorce from Allison. And it's one of my favorite tapes that I have. I actually turned the interview around and interviewed him. And because I knew everything about him and I had done a lot of research on him. And so that was a really interesting day. And Barker was my influence because I used to come home from nursery school when I was going in Indianapolis, Indiana, and he was doing Truth or Consequences on NBC. And my first job out of college working in Los Angeles was as an idea man on Truth or Consequences. And I have a documentary coming out called On Your Mark, which premieres in October. And the opening of this documentary is Bob Barker introducing me on the stage of the Magic Castle when I was 21 years old. It's just freaky to go back and look at that.
Very cool. By the way, I've got magician questions for you.
Oh,
I really do. I am as prepared for this interview as I have ever been in my entire life for anything. I really mean it.
That's cool.
No way I put this much effort into a single collegiate class that I did preparing for you to come in today.
Cool.
And, you know, I learned that you were a page at CBS for a while.
Yeah, I was.
And when you talk about how you transitioned into a young man looking for a career to finding a career as a game show host, mm-hmm. you literally learned from the best ever in the business. Bob Barker was an influence on you.
Yep.
Wink Martindale was an influence on you.
He was my neighbor for a while, yeah.
That is so cool.
Yeah. Yeah, and Bob, I was so I was working. My first introduction was I was a page on Price is Right, and there I was, you know, in contestants' row, looking up at Bob, thinking, "Oh my God, I've died and gone to heaven." Then I get a job doing Price or doing, Truth or Consequences, and throughout our, I've got many Bob Barker stories, but the bottom line is he was probably the best ever. When it came to doing that stuff. And he was the model that I hope to attain at some point, you know.
He created a sense of rooting for the contestant and drama that no host of The Price is Right since has been able to create. I used to love The Price is Right.
Yes. You don't watch it anymore.
Drew Carey is the worst host of – these are not Mark's words. These are mine. Drew Carey could not give a damn if a single person wins or loses a single thing. You can actually see him trying to get – basically, his model's phone number is to go party with him afterwards. He does not care at all.
I'm not sure that it makes a difference because the ratings maintain. You know, the question is, are these shows host-driven or not? People seem to still be watching. Is he as good a host as Bob? No. I think whoever walked into that position, it's sort of like Jimmy Fallon walking in, you know, or Jay to where Johnny was. So it's difficult, needless to say. The one thing that Barker and I always used to talk about was making the contestants the stars. Mm-hmm. And Bob and I always discussed the fact that the model was Jack Benny. When we grew up, Jack Benny was a comedian who had an ensemble of people, and everybody else got the jokes, and he was sort of the straight man. And that's how Bob looked at it. He said, if I get one or two jokes in a week, that's fine, because it's not about me, it's about the contestants. And I remembered that, and I think that's one of the reasons Double Dare was successful. I never talked down to the kids. I never used a squeaky voice and never said, do you have a girlfriend? I treated them like adults and with respect, and by the way, wanted them to win every game, and I think Bob certainly was a big influence on that.
That's so cool. We've got Mark Summers hanging out with us in studio. You know, I look at, you know, that Jack Benny comment. The Benny brilliance was he used to tell people it doesn't matter who gets the punchline off because the very next day at work, they're going to say,
did you see the Jack Benny show?
It was so funny last night.
Yep. Yeah, exactly right.
TV history is washing over me. This is beautiful.
Well, I got to meet him towards the end. I was a page, and there was an AFI dinner for Jimmy Cagney. And Sammy Kahn wrote a song for Frank Sinatra. That's a whole other story I can tell you about. And Mr. Benny was working at a private club that night and couldn't see it. So my job was to meet him at the door at CBS Television City the next day and sit with him as he watched the recording of the James Cagney AFI tribute. And he walked in, and the first thing he said to me was, "Do they still have that lousy cafeteria here?" That's what he said to me. And it was just so
very Jack Benny.
Yes, the fact that I got the last end of real show business. I got to meet, you know, Frank Sinatra. I got to meet Jack Benny. I you know, it was just the cool. And then that night at the AFI dinner, I was a page then, and you know, I Groucho Marx was there. You know, I stood next to Don Rickles as he fawned over James Cagney. It was a John Wayne was there. I mean, it just was nuts, the people that I came in contact with. I worked on the Sonny and Cher show. You know, I worked on the Carol Burnett show. And you know, I'm not so sure that anything has really come up to that level from those days.
I agree with you. You look at TV and its landscape right now, and you go back and you look at not only, well, first of all, we'll never consume anything like that again because we now live in a 600-channel universe.
Yeah. But and these stupid things here, these stupid
right,
phones.
Right. But, you know, everyone's like, Amy Schumer is the greatest female comedian in the history of television. And I always said, the Carol Burnett show,
yeah,
just for a moment, you had Harvey Keitel and Corman. I mean, like, it was just genius. Yeah. It was absolute genius, and you were right there in the middle of it.
I was there. I was so lucky to be a part. I was on the set the last day of the Sonny and Cher show when they had announced the divorce, and Sonny didn't want to get it done, and he was in the background playing football, and they wanted to get him on the set, and Cher was in her dressing room, and it was just like the tension of let's just go through it, get it done, and go home was so uncomfortable and yet sort of magical to be a part of that whole situation. You know?
That is cool. You know, it's a moment in time.
Oh, my God, you know? Just insanity.
So you get the Double Dare gig. I actually thought you were in your 20s too. I'm surprised to find out.
I'll be 66 in November.
You wear it well,
well,
man.
Thank you.
You really, really do. It's
thank
that
you.
Full head of beautiful hair that you still have.
And I just got a cut yesterday.
Very looking good. Thanks for getting a cut for the radio show.
Did,
it goes over huge. So tell us about the audition process, because Nickelodeon is an up and coming network at that time.
Yep.
And did you have any creative control over the show? Was it your baby? Did you come up with it? Like, is it playoff truth or consequences?
Trust me, if I came up with it, I wouldn't be sitting here with you right now.
So how did you get the job?
It was everything that's happened in my career that has worked out has all been a mistake. I was doing warm-ups on television shows. I was working on Star Search and Webster and What's Happening Now and Our Magazine and making a pretty darn good living. I started the Comedy Store in 1976. I started with Dave Letterman, Robin Williams, Gary Shandling, all those guys. We all started together. It's pretty lonely at the bottom there because, you know, how many times can you ask people where they're from? And Dave had started to break through, Robin broke through, Jay started to break through, and I wasn't that good as a stand-up comic. I knew I could be myself, but I wasn't particularly good at doing stand-up. And a friend of mine, Dave Garrison.
Did you work blue?
No, I didn't. That was the other thing. I was sort of the David Brenner. I was very clean.
Okay.
And, you know, back then is when everybody started saying the F word. And, you
right.
know, and I wasn't into it. I just wasn't into it. And so a friend of mine from Indianapolis, Dave Garrison, was a ventriloquist. And Dave came out to L.A. to seek his fame and fortune about the same time I did. And he got just sort of fed up with the whole thing. And he called me up one day and said, "I just got a phone call from some network I'd never heard of called Nickelodeon. There's some game show. I'm not going to go on camera anymore. I'm giving up the ventriloquism. I'm going to be a producer. Why don't you go to this audition instead of me?" I went, "Okay, great." So I don't even know if you could even do that today. So I went to this audition. I said, "Dave Garrison was supposed to be here at 1:15. He couldn't make it. I'm going to fill in." They said, "Fine." They had auditioned, I find out after the fact, 1,000 people in New York and didn't like anybody. So they came to Los Angeles. And I was the first guy to audition in L.A. And I got out of the audition and I said to my agent, "I got this." And he said, "That's what you think. I have like 9 other clients going. Good luck." And I did one audition, got a second callback, a third callback. And the one thing I used to do when I auditioned was I would get the name of the exec producer and the casting director, got their names, knew the show was going to start shooting in September. End of August, I called Mike Klinghoffer, the exec producer, and I said, "What's going on? Are you guys casting this thing?" And he said, "We're just talking about you. We got it narrowed down to you and another guy.
Do you know what the second place finisher was?
Nobody has ever told me. Okay. And they said, but we
Drew
don't
Carey.
Know. Yeah. They said, we don't know if you guys are any good with kids. Cause when we did the auditions, they had grownups playing the part of kids. And I said, well, I have kids. I did magic shows for kids. They said, not good enough. So I came up with a concept. I said, why don't you fly us both to New York, put us in a studio with kids, let the best man win. They flew us both there. To this day, don't know who the other guy was. We did the audition on a Monday or on a Tuesday. Wednesday, I get the phone call, you got the job. And I said, after 1,000 auditions in New York and 1,000 L.A., why did I get the job? And they said, quite honestly, you guys were about even. But at the end of his audition, he looked at the camera and said, is that it? Do you guys want me to do something else? And I looked at the camera and said, we'll be back with more Double Dare right after this. And because I threw it to commercial, they thought that was more professional.
Wow.
And that's how I ended up with the gig. And by the way, after growing up watching Barker and Jack Barry and, you know, Gene Rayburn and all those guys, you always throw it to commercial when you're done.
Yeah.
That's what you do. And so who would have thought that watching TV would have been the smartest thing I ever did? That's what landed me a job to change my life.
Gianna, note to ourselves, throw to commercial.
Throw to commercial.
Probably have to do that about now, don't you?
I'm actually making get notes.
Better.
I'm not kidding.
Yeah, we've got what we call the big segment at the beginning of every hour. We're going to go to 25
if
you want a time spot right here.
Fantastic.
And then we're just going to keep going because Mark Summers is here this afternoon and is going to be hanging out with us today to talk about. We're going to get into the world of sports and the fan that you are and how you became all that way. And,
yeah.
But we got way too much. We're just at the dawn of Double Dare. You
yes.
said that you've got this.
Yep.
You knew you had it from your
it.
Very first. What was the inclination? Why did you feel that way?
You know what? Here's the thing. Nobody in the room knew anything about game shows. I had been a writer on many game shows at that point in my life and had started to announce some game shows. And I kind of knew my way around the territory a little bit. So I went in with tremendous confidence. And I was also, at that point in my life, I was tired of doing warm-ups. I had opened up, believe it or not, a smoked salmon business that was doing better than I was doing professionally in show business. And I thought, well, hell, this is my last-ditch effort. If this doesn't work, you know, I'm done. I'm going to be working green rooms and catering for the rest of my life. And for some reason, I went in with more confidence than I had ever done it before. We shot 65 of these things, and it exploded. Back in the day, VHS or UHF TV was huge, and they were running Facts of Life and Different Strokes, getting huge numbers. All of a sudden, the numbers start to go away.
You take the good, you take the bad, you take them both, and there you have it.
There you
Facts
go.
Of
Facts of Life.
Thank you.
And all of a sudden, their ratings drop. They can't figure out where they're going. Well, there's something research they found out wise. The kids would go to the playground and say, I saw these guys jump into 4,000 pounds of baked beans, get a flag, and then they went to space camp. And not everybody had cable back then, so they'd go to the home of the kid who had the cable thing. And then all of a sudden, it started to snowball. And they contribute, actually, the rise of cable to three people. Larry King on CNN.
Sure.
Gallagher on Showtime. And me on Nickelodeon, because it forced people to go out and, you know, order cable and start watching television. So we shot a total of 525 episodes, the longest running series in the history of Nickelodeon. And, you know, we did every version. We did Family Double Dare. We did Super Sloppy Double Dare. We did celebrity versions. Started in Philly, went to New York, back to Philly, finally down in Orlando. And I got to tell you, I mean, I can't believe they gave me a check at the end of the week. It was the most fun. Harvey, our announcer, Robin, my sidekick. You know, and then, yes, I eventually became producer. I edited the show and was a multiple, you know, sort of person who got to arrange, select questions, test physical challenges, work on new obstacles. And it's kind of where I got the background as a producer that led me to kind of what I'm doing today as well.
Are you just swimming in Conair telephones?
Yes. You remember that, huh?
Oh, of course.
Conair telephones. That's hysterical.
I remember when my sister finally got one from like the CVS, I said, that's the same phone they give away on Double Dare.
Conair. I haven't heard that word in years.
The
man, that's
Conair
funny.
Phone. Absolutely. It was good. It was a pink pastel phone. And this is when phones still had cords.
Yeah. Oh,
you
yeah.
know, there was no video playing. Yeah. Oh,
true.
It was so cool that she had the Conair telephone. When did you realize that it was a hit? I mean, you said eventually it became a thing that kids were talking about and play. I mean, this thing went from popular to bona fide hit to touch point in the zeitgeist
yeah.
of a childhood's
to insanity.
Culture.
Insanity.
Yes.
And it's interesting because so many people your age who grew up who are, you know, celebrities who come and see me and like go crazy. I've got a bunch of those stories. But we got called to do a personal appearance in Virginia on a weekend. And, you know, I didn't think anybody was going to show up. Well, 5,000 people showed up at this mall, okay? Then we had one the next week, and 7,500 people showed up at the mall. Then we did another one, and there was 10,000 people at a mall. And somebody said, well, we should put this in an arena. So next thing I know, for 8 years, we toured, did 40 personal appearances a year for 8 years, and we were selling out the Palace of Auburn Hills, you know, and theaters around the country, 20,000-seat arenas. So I was like a rock star for kids. It was insanity. And we'd do a full two-hour show. So and then I did another show called What Would You Do, which was, you know, another crazy program that came out of Nickelodeon. And it was right time, right place. They found out that kids were living vicariously through their parents, watching game shows, didn't have their own show. We gave prizes. We gave money. We gave computers. We, you know, sent them on vacations. And it was, you know, also a lot of it is timing. Come on, I'm not going to take full credit for this deal. Nickelodeon put it on at 5:30. Moms would say, let me finish dinner, go watch your show. It was just the right place, the right time. You know, I'll tell you another story that I heard, and to this day, it's one of the few guys I've never met and always wanted to, and he lives up here. The story I was told was that Dana Carvey was offered the show, got the same offer for Saturday Night Live that same week, took that instead of Double Dare. And if that's true, I've always wanted to say thank you because, you know, it could have changed my life and it obviously could have changed his.
How often, because I know that you were in radio and you were a stand-up comedian and you dabbled in magicianry. Is that the right word for it?
Magic.
Dabbled in magic. Yes. Okay. How often did a program director tell you, like, I can hear the smile in your voice? How much do you think your very sunny voice helped you as a host in your career?
That's interesting. Well, you're a broadcaster, so you get this. I think a lot. You know, I'll be at a department store and somebody will turn around and go, I knew that was your voice. I don't think I have a distinctive voice, but apparently I do.
Yes, you do.
And the last time I did, I'm not name dropping, but I've known Seacrest since he's 19 years old. Last time I did Seacrest radio show, he said, you know, you pissed me off. And I said, why? He said, you sound exactly the same now as you did when you were doing Double Dare. And he said, you know, most guys your age, you know, they start to get a little creaky and this and that. But for whatever reason, I've been, you know, able to keep this, you know, young, youthful voice going.
Non-smoker.
Well, I've never smoked.
There you
ever,
go.
In my life. I've never even tried a cigarette. You know?
Me neither.
No, you either, huh?
Me neither.
No.
No, we're in San Francisco. We don't smoke cigarettes.
Well, I've never done the funny
things,
one.
Maybe.
But this is so much fun. I'm glad that you're here. So it becomes a cultural touch point. And now if you look at who we are as a society, it is the looking back that provides, you know, South Park just did a whole thing about member berries. It is the what we remember about our childhood is pretty much now where we retreat to mentally for all our warm and fuzzies because everything else is available on the internet. So what was special to you when you were a kid? It was Double Dare.
It was Double Dare. And I'm backstage at a Bruno Mars concert in Philadelphia. And the agent said, would you like to meet Bruno? I said, God, I'd love to meet him. I said, he's not going to have any idea who I am, but I'd love to meet him. And he sees me on the other side of the stage and he runs, throws his arms around me, hugs me. And I said, do you know who I am? And he said, you raised me. And, oh, my God. You know, and that's happened to me many times with many celebrities who, you know, sort of are, you know, in awe, which always makes me laugh because I'm just I just wanted to be a working broadcaster. That's all I ever wanted to do. The fact that any of this stuff actually worked was pretty darn cool. And so I'm just, you know, I hate it when people come up to me and say, I know you don't want to talk about this and I know you're probably tired of it. It's like, no, I'm happy you remember who the hell I am. So, you know, I'm always happy to sit and talk and sign autographs and take pictures and whatever you want to do because I've been lucky. I've been very lucky.
Well, I'm glad you feel that way because at 7 o'clock when we're done, we said that you'd meet everyone who wanted to meet you out on the corner and you'd be signing flat objects only.
Why not?
Mark Summers is here with us in studio for the rest of the afternoon. We haven't even gotten to Food Network. As a matter of fact, we haven't even gotten to the physical challenges yet. Who came up with the booger in the nose thing that is next here on 95.7 The Game?
On your mark, get set, go!
Welcome to Super Sloppy Double Dare. We have things left up here. Props is what they are called.
Would you mind if I gave you a Double Dare t-shirt? Would you like that?
No. Well, I have egg on my shoe and a song in my heart, and we're going to carry on with this next physical challenge, and it goes something like this.
You ever play sock baseball?
You ever been in a cockpit before? You ever seen a grown man naked?
Parents will love this at home. What was Popeye's father's name?
Dare.
Ah, no, that's wrong.
What are you doing?
Probably don't even know, and they call you the brains.
Ah!
Hey, you're a man. Wipe it on your shirt, pal, you know?
Man. You can't keep kids on the edge of their seat like that.
I really... You must stand right here and pray.
Welcome to clearly one of the best wrestling matches of all time, Super.
Slap-a-mania.
This is the dumbest thing I've ever done.
And as we always like to say, Harvey must have a lot of money put away.
Good God. Man calls himself a wrestler. All right, well,
thank you so much. We've lost control.
We're cutting. Great. Thank goodness.
That is the radio equivalent of us rolling out the red carpet for you.
Well, I got to tell you, Super Slap-a-Mania 1 that we did with Bobby the Brain Heenan and Gorilla Monsoon was one of the most thrilling days of my life because nobody was funnier. I mean, he's still alive. He's unfortunately very sick. But Bobby Heenan was a genius. And he came on, and he knew how to play this game. And Gorilla Monsoon, his name was Gino Morello, had like 3 degrees from college. But these guys were comedians and knew how to play the crowd, and they were geniuses. And they said to me, do you mind if we do something to you at the end? I said, do whatever you want. And they picked me up and dropped me in a big vat of chocolate. And, you know, it was great television, and they were the sweetest guys, and I had great friendships with these guys. And then we did Super Slap-a-Mania 2. I mean, one day we had we were doing the celebrity version on Fox. We had Weird Al Yankovic against Lou Ferrigno. I mean, you know, the whole thing was just ridiculous.
Very cool. Yeah. I mean, whenever you can get Ferrigno v. Yankovic, you go for it. I mean, that is ratings gold.
We kicked off the Fox Network at 8 o'clock. Nobody even remembers that it was Double Dare that kicked off the Fox Network on weekends.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. And then the Simpson guy came along. Or the, yeah. This fam, Tracy Ullman, is the where he gave birth
Ullman
to
too.
That. Yeah.
Yep.
Mark Summers is joining us. That very familiar voice you hear is actually with us in studio today. Welcome back to the show. It's great to have you here. Someone says, and by the way, your reviews are through the roof on the always almost miserable text line that we have going
it's
here.
A little salty at times.
The text line is loving this right
oh,
now.
Good.
It says, Damon, I hope you're taking a couple of listener questions. Why wasn't the go-kart the top prize every damn time? It was the best possible prize for a kid.
That's what my son always wanted. He wanted one of those go-karts. Yeah, that was cool. It was a 2-seater go-kart, as I remember.
Very cool.
Yeah, and you know, we have Space Camp trips to Disney before Disney Channel happened, and computers. But I will admit that the go-kart was probably the coolest thing we ever gave away.
Did you remember that movie Space Camp, which I think helped people watch Double Dare? Because, like, if you could get a trip to Space Camp after you had just seen the movie, I mean, that's like a kidgasm that you just can't even contain the
a
excitement.
Kidgasm. There's a new word
probably
for you.
Shouldn't use that word again, to be totally honest with you.
There you go.
Who were the contestants? Where did you find the kids?
This was the best part about the show. People say to me, why do you think the show is successful? And I said, one of the reasons was because we used real kids from the Philadelphia school system, New Jersey, we'd go to Delaware, and where Disney had perfect blonde hair, blue-eyed, you know, beautifully coiffed kids. We had kids with pimples and their hair was a little messed up, and they were real.
They're
and
normal.
You know, they were normal kids. And I think the kids at home could relate to them. The hard part for me was the Philadelphia accent is unusual, to say the least. And if you're going away for the summer, they would say, I'd say, what are you doing for the summer? They'd say, going down shore. Well, I didn't know what downshore meant. It down the shore, which means they go to the beaches in New Jersey. But it took me about 5 times before I understood what downshore meant. And, you know, then we went to New York. And then when we went to Orlando and we had all of America standing in line at 7 o'clock in the morning to get in, you know, you could back then come in, get an audition and be on the 11 o'clock show. And, you know, they just, one of the biggest mistakes Nickelodeon ever made was closing those studios down there because kids were flocking to go to Universal Studios to come to these live shows. We did What Would You Do? And we did Double Dare, and they did, you know, Guts and, you know, a million other programs, and they were sold out. You know, we changed the audience 5, 6, 7 times a day. There were so many people.
How many episodes would you film in a day?
You ready for this? 6.
Wow.
Yeah, we do 30 shows a week. You know, it was crazy. We would do 3 upfront games and then 3 obstacle courses, break for lunch, 3 upfronts, and 3 obstacle courses.
Wow.
That's a long day.
It was exhausting. A
lot of mopping for all those consecutive obstacle courses.
And in Philadelphia, it was difficult because the studio was about the size of this studio. But when they built the Nick Studios down in Orlando, they built drains into the floors.
Smart.
So these guys would come on with these massive squeegees and just put it into these drains and, you know, worked out much better then.
What was slime?
Well, here's the thing. So you were telling me about your daughter.
My son.
Your son.
Yeah, my son is obsessed with slime.
Okay.
We watch YouTube videos. We make it all the time.
But
with
glue. They tell you to use, glue and all stuff. Okay, here's what we used on Double Dare. Vanilla pudding, applesauce, and green food coloring. That was it.
So it was edible.
Well, everything has, see, insurance-wise, if the food got in the kids' mouths, it had to be edible. So that was part of the deal. And if you have saline solution and Elmer's glue in your mouth, that's not real slime. And the consistency that we had is totally different than that stuff I see online. So that was the real recipe.
I'm going to make it.
Yeah, there you go.
Fun.
Did you ever have parents, moms, throwing themselves at you, doing whatever it took to get their kid on to Double Dare? I mean, the highly mobile, can grease the host a little, maybe get my kid on. How often did people try to bribe you on behalf of their kid?
All the time. Okay. As soon as people found out where I lived, there were people knocking on my door 24/7. We literally had to move at one point into a gated community.
Gated community.
Yes.
Nice.
Because it was 24/7. The weird part for me, okay, you know, this is about, you know, when I used to work at the Comedy Store, all the girls that hung backstage and wanted to hang out, we used to refer to them as jokies, okay? And there were women, we would do meet and greets, and every year we were sponsored. 1 year Sunkist, 1 year Reebok, every year was a different sponsor. And we'd do the meet and greets with the kids, and the moms who would throw themselves at me was freaky, okay? I mean, I have one story I'll tell you off the air, but
it's an off the air story.
No,
yeah.
We insist. Just go for it.
Share.
Well, this woman, she said, "Will you take a picture with me?" And I said, "Sure, absolutely." And as they're taking the picture, she takes her hand and slips it down the back of my pants and grabs my ass. And it's like, whoa, what was that? And as she's leaving, she hands me a little note and she says, "Here's my phone number. My husband's a cop. He works the midnight shift. Give me a call." And it's like, yeah, your husband's a cop. He's got a gun. I'm going to give you a call at midnight. That makes a great idea. And by the way, I'm married and have two kids. Okay.
Right.
So,
wow.
like, thanks very much for the offer. But yes, the fact that he comes with bulletproof vests and weaponry.
I'm
means
out.
It was kind of a regular thing that moms thought, you know, because I was the closest thing to show business when you go to St. Louis or Kansas City. So that was always an odd part of show business to me, you know.
And that's when Mark got his first professional goosing from a mom who wanted their kid on Double Dare.
She was cute, though. I must say that.
Next hour, we're going to get into Food Network. We're going to get into TED Talks. We're going to get into everything in its place. A lot of the questions are, will you ask Mark about talking about OCD? I have OCD, and him talking about it made me realize that I had it.
Nice.
And there's some stuff going on here. We're going to get into all of that. We'll talk about your documentary, On the Mark, which is coming out in
October.
Fantastic. One of the first rules of show business is never work with animals or kids. And you obviously worked with kids six times a day.
Yep.
How often did you run into the kid who was either awestruck by the moment, got nervous without mom or dad, was overwhelmed by the TV setting, and you had to call a timeout and shut the whole thing down?
Almost never. Which was fascinating because I would make a point of going into the makeup room and introducing myself and getting to know them so they didn't walk out. Now, as the show grew exponentially and we became bigger and bigger, I didn't want them to be intimidated. So I wanted to cozy up to them in a proper way as the host so they didn't get nervous. I'll tell you where it got nuts. When we did Family Double Dare on Fox and we were giving away cars.
Right.
And the parents, you know, the kids did it for fun. If the kids didn't win and didn't get the obstacle course, they just wanted to get messy, okay? But the parents were intense. And a couple of times, one time, the kid missed obstacle number 8 in the flag and, you know, 2 seconds left. And the father grabbed the kid by the neck and threw him against the wall and said, "You little so-and-so, I needed that car." And also, and we had to pull him off, you know. So that those things happen from time to time. And, you know, it's a game. We're here to have fun. Don't take it so darn seriously.
It's like a Little League game. Leave it to the parents to ruin it.
Yes, yeah. I coached for 8 years. Believe me, I know all about that. One of the other things that was happening is one day each obstacle had to be tested by our insurance company to make sure that it was safe. And so we had this thing called the sewer chute. I don't know if you remember that one, but a kid had to climb up a ladder and come down this small sort of plexiglass box. The kid flipped over. I could have sworn that the kid was dead. It looked like he snapped his neck. Okay. And you hear me saying in the rest of the course, "Are you okay? Are you okay?" I'm wanting to stop tape. And then, you know. And so he gets to obstacle number 5 and, you know, "Sorry, are you okay? You know, see you tomorrow on Double Dare." His father was an attorney and he came up to us afterwards and goes, "You know, that wasn't very safe." And the big screen TV was obstacle number 6. Here's the deal. I won't sue you guys if you give us the large screen TV. And we went, whatever you want, sir.
You're done.
Wow.
Keep us out of court.
That's right. We didn't want to do it. Now, I had, when doing the tour was crazy because we would do two shows a day. I get offered in Philadelphia to do three shows. We did like a 10, a 1, and a 4. It was exhausting. And we would bring parents up on stage and have the kids pie them. And if they didn't pie them the way I thought they should be pied, I would say, no, that's not how you do it. This is how you do it. And I would really deck the parents because it would be good and the audience would laugh. And we hear 20,000 people laugh. It's a cool thing. So I get a phone call like a Wednesday after we do the Philadelphia third show. Hi, this is a counsel for Viacom. I said, yes, how are you? And they said, fine. Were you in Philadelphia over the weekend? I said, yeah, as a matter of fact, I was. Did you do a show at 4 o'clock? Yeah. Do you remember bringing on a mom and a kid? Yeah, as a matter of fact. Did you throw a pie in this mom's face? I said, well, as a matter of fact, I did. I said, why? And they said, they're suing us for $2 million. She said she can't have sex with her husband anymore. I said, what? She said, yeah. And it was a nuisance suit. And they gave her $25,000 to go away. But that was her thing, that I somehow distracted her brain that she could never have sex with her husband anymore because of the way I hit her in the face with a pie.
So, traumatic pieing.
Traumatic pieing. You know, what can I tell you? So, you know, those things really happen, and you kind of scratch your head. But, you know, when a company becomes large like that, people figure, oh, I'm just going to sue them and see what I can get out of it. She got $25,000 to go away.
Wow.
How you came up with the physical challenges, how you basically kept it sloppy, is something that I want to know about. And we're going to get back into that next with Mark Summers here on 95.7 The Game. Damon, today's show is amazing. Yes, it is. And it's all because of Mark Summers being good enough to come in and hang out with us, not just this hour, but he's sticking around next hour, too. And that's good. We haven't even gotten a Food Network yet. I promise myself, I promise you, we would come back talking about physical challenges.
Yes, we would.
Who came up with them?
Alan Silberberg was our head writer. This guy was a genius. Knew how to write into my sense of humor, but also knew how to do these things. So he and Byron Taylor, who built all the props, every night at about 7 o'clock, they would bring in about 20 kids from the local school systems, and we would try these things out. And if they didn't work three times, then we would never put them on the show. And the classic one was there was a mailbox on one side of the stage, and they had a row of paper airplanes. And they had 20 seconds to get one paper airplane into the mailbox. Now, it did not work at all during the rehearsal. But Mike Klinghoffer, our exec producer, said, I don't know. I really like this. I'm going to put it on anyway. I said, Mike, it's a waste of time.
Can't do it.
He can't do it. So he said, we're going to do it anyway. So the next day, first physical challenge comes out. They put the mailbox there, and they line up 10 paper airplanes. I said, okay, here's the deal. We have these 10 airplanes over here. We got the mailbox over there. We got 20 seconds. First one, the kids, I go right back into it, gets the airplane into the mailbox, gets 40 points in continued control. And then I looked at the camera, and I said, okay, I'm going to tell you guys something. We tried this in rehearsal. It did not work. Our exec producer loves it. And I said, here's the deal. If any one of these kids gets the plane into the mailbox, I'll give you my house. Okay, that's what I said. On your mark, get set, go. The first kid picks up the first plane, boom, right into the freaking mailbox, and they get an extreme close-up on me. I mean, what was I going to do?
Homeless ever since.
Homeless ever since. But, you know, that was the fun stuff. That was the shtick that we did. And we were, look, we were a bunch of frat guys playing games for kids. And we got away with everything because Nickelodeon was just starting to build a channel. They never looked at anything we did. I'm doing Ed Sullivan impressions and things. Kids didn't know what the hell I was talking about. And yet they were laughing. And I used to do, and ready for this, Ethel Merman impression. Now, you guys don't even know who Ethel Merman was.
You'll be swell.
There you go.
You'll be great.
And one day a kid in the audience goes, hey, Mark, I can do Ethel Merman as well. The kid was like 10 years old. So we came out of commercial and we both did, you know, Ethel Merman. Well, who the hell would do that? Okay. And I had regular things. I had my assistant Mary Dudley, and I'd bring her on every day, and she'd, what's the Yiddish word of the day? And, you know, she'd say, she would say, Meshuggah. And I said, thank you. Tell us what Meshuggah means. It means crazy. Thank you, Mary Dudley. You know, and I just made up stuff as we went along, and for whatever reason, it just worked, you know?
It was fantastic. Again, it's I'm literally being wrapped like in a blanket full of warm childhood memories in here. When it came to the obstacle course at the very end, did you have a favorite obstacle? Would you rank after everything that you've seen as the easiest, the hardest? Which stood out to you as this is even a little unfair?
Well, you know, you can never depend on kids to do what you want them to do. And it, we had it figured that there would be two wins in an obstacle course in a 5-day week. to stay on budget. So sometimes we'd have three or four winners. So we would try and make the hardest obstacle course we possibly could. And if you saw the ant farm on stage, you knew we were over budget because it took the kids an hour and a half to get through the freaking ant farm. Okay, but certain times they would still go through it. And then we'd go like 2 weeks without a winner and we'd build what we think was the easiest course possible and they couldn't get through it. So you never could predict what was going to work and what wasn't going to work. The gumball machine was one of my favorites. It just was cool. You went through all those balls and end up at the bottom and that was cool. Certainly Pickett, I think, is I name that and that's kind of my deal. It's a gigantic nose. We do drunk double dare in beer week in Philadelphia every year.
We call it Dunkle Dare.
And fun. When we bring out the nose, everybody goes berserk. I don't know what it is about that deal. Once again, childhood memories, nostalgia, and you know, and at the end of the night, after we're doing a 2-hour show where, you know, people are liquored up, you see grown-ups throwing green slime and getting whipped creamed to death and just, you know, these are, now think about it. If you were 12 years old, you're now 42. Okay. Mm-hmm. And you have a real job and kids. But for some reason, you bring out Mark Summers, alcohol and physical challenges and, you know, hold the bar, all doors are open and anything is possible, you know?
It's fantastic. You know, and everything that is old is new again.
Yep.
And I know that there have been incarnations. I know you tried it again in 2000.
No, let me stop you there.
All right. Wasn't you?
They couldn't decide if they wanted me to do it. They thought in 2000 I was too old.
What the hell is that?
So they said, we're going to get a new host, but we want you to be the executive producer. Okay. So I selected the kid who was to take my place, and he actually was
very magnanimous.
Well, he was very good. The problem was some of the behind the scenes action where we had, you know, too many cooks in the kitchen, so to speak, where they had this guy. I never had an IFP. IFP is, for those listening, is a little thing in your ear and the producers are talking
voice
to you.
Voice of God.
Yeah, I never had that. They were telling this poor kid everything to say. Now, we hired him for a reason. He was smart. He was good at what he did. He didn't need an IFP. But the producer at the time, then they wanted to add something to make it different. So they added something called the Triple Dare Challenge, which took an hour and a half to explain. And then if you didn't want to do it, it didn't move the game forward. So sadly, it didn't. Jason Harris was the host and he was really good at it. Never got the opportunity he deserved. And, you know, for whatever reason, I'm the guy who is, you know, most remembered from the program, but not to take anything away from Jason because he's had a great career. He is like the top voiceover guy in the country and is brilliant at what he does, but that, for whatever reason, didn't work out.
And that is not Harvey the announcer.
No, Harvey's still a dear friend, and he still does Dunkle Dare with me, and Robin was with me in Philly last week doing it. And yeah, we're all still, that's a cool thing about everybody on that cast, from Alan Silverberg, our head writer, to Mike Klinghoffer, we're all still friends. We have dinner, we hang out, and it was fantastic.
I've got a note here from Albie himself saying, ask him about forgetting to stuff the flag in the pillow. Because the kid would start parading around with the flag and not put it in the pillow.
No. Here's what happened. The very first episode, you know, once again, we didn't know what the hell we were doing. So I tell him the obstacle course. I say, on your mark, it said go. And it was called Nightmare. And there was supposed to be an orange flag in the pillow. Well, somebody forgot to put the orange flag in the pillow. On your mark, it said go.
Oh,
in
geez.
60 seconds. And the head of the network, Jerry Laybourne at the time, was there and said, now we can't do that for our first show, so let's go back. And so now they put the flag in, and the kid dumps it, and now the flag, which should have come out first, is now on the – and so another 60 seconds. And so we did it three or four times before they finally figured out – and basically they had it sticking out at the very end to move it on. But, you know, you learn these things along the way. If you go back and look at the first episode of Price is Right, as good as Barker always was, he wasn't as good on episode one as he was on,
right,
you know, 20,001. And we could say that for all of us. I'm sure, you know, the show you do now is better than the show you did 5 years ago. And certainly I'm much better as a host now than I was when we started. I look at the first 65 and I kind of wonder why they ever kept me around. I was so bad. But, you know, if you're given permission to learn your craft on the job, then, you know, we're lucky and it hopefully turns out.
Yeah, no, and you got to have the support from up top.
Yes.
Or you get pulled or yanked or all of a sudden there's another person that they're trying out. Did at any point in time you think they're going to replace me?
When they went into syndication, they almost did, because the cable show had done so well, and I was making a ton of dough at the time with personal appearances, stuff like that. And they didn't like what my agent asked for, and they were getting ready to replace me, and we had 24 hours. And finally, Jerry Laybourne, thank God,
what, said, are you supposed to ask for less when you're going network?
Don't you
come
think?
On.
And she said, it worked with him. I'm not sure it's going to work without him. Give him what he wants. We're sticking with him. And so there was a turning point. Now, here was an interesting story. I find out through the grapevine that they're doing an adult version of Double Dare. Okay. Why didn't you tell me? Well, you're a kid show host. We would never ask you to do it. So here's a trivia question for you. Who did the pilot of Adult Double Dare?
I have no Artie Lang.
No clue.
Bruce Jenner.
No way.
Bruce Jenner.
Yep.
Wow.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah. There you go. And it was pathetic and never saw the light of day.
Wow.
And now known for other things.
Yes.
Yeah.
And
now, I don't know what those are, but nonetheless.
Known for other things. Yeah. So let's see. I believe that we have thoroughly gone over the oral history of Double Dare. We haven't even made the career transition that you did to Food Network, which is where I rediscovered you.
Oh, really? Yeah.
As you helped really put another young fledgling network on the map.
Twice I've done that.
Yes, you have. Look at what you're doing for our show's ratings right now.
Three times a charm.
Yeah. So when we come on back, we're going to make that transition to Food Network. Was there a Playboy Grotto Mansion period in between? Was there a bottoming out? Was there a drug induced cocaine Mark Summers on a bender era at any point in time?
No.
We get to all that behind the music with Mark Summers next on 95.7 The Game.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.